In many ways, my own parents are very private people, and they tend to keep to themselves, especially in our home. They have lots of friends, mostly immigrants like them, but home and family for us was a small, contained unit, and not particularly open. We weren't the kind of family that had kids over for dinner all the time, like my household is today. But when I was about 9 years old, Timothy came to live with us. After his mother, a woman named Sheena, and my mom's good friend had died of cancer. Timothy had lost his father as a child and was a grieving young adult struggling with his stepfather. He was really just an angry young man in that moment. I remember my 9-year-old self feeling somewhat frightened of him. And I also remember going to tell on him for smoking in his room. And it wasn't until a few years later that I was actually wondering exactly what he was smoking at that time. Now, Timothy stayed with us for just a few months, I think. And then I, at least, never really saw him again after that. But about 25 years later, Timothy called me. Thanks to the internet, he had learned that I, too, was living in Northern California. My husband, Phil, and I had a lovely, if somewhat awkward, dinner at his house in Moraga, California. After all, I was merely a child the last time he saw me. Together, though, we talked about my strict and curmudgeonly father with that inner knowing that's only possible from those who've lived with him. I apologized for being a tattletale, and he acknowledged that he was smoking all manner of things. But mostly, he wanted me to know how important it was that my parents took him in during that very difficult time in his life. Reconnecting with me was a way of thanking them. And although we've never really talked about it as such, I can't but help but imagine that Timothy's sojourn in our home, in my childhood home, was important to my parents as well. Certainly, it was a parting gift to their dear friend, Sheena. Certainly, they had to stretch to accommodate a young adult in their midst, a foreigner at our table. They had to open themselves up to the presence, the embodiment of profound grief, in hopes that their meager offerings of a bed, a roof over his head, and a few meals could provide some little bit of solace. That brief reconnection with Timothy taught me one thing. Even with the butting of heads between him and my father, the very act of inviting Timothy into our home, offering him sanctuary when he had no place else to go, made all the difference in his life. Perhaps there was a time in your life as well when you needed sanctuary. When the world had thrown you off course and you felt alone and unsheltered from the harsh realities of life. If you were lucky, there was someone who said, "You, I see you, and I see what you need, and I extend myself for your well-being." Perhaps instead you've offered yourself, as my parents did, to a weary soul in need of solace. And it made all the difference. Now, I know that people in this congregation did just that thing during the sanctuary movement in the 1980s, offering themselves, their homes, and their lives to Central American refugees, whose countries had been torn apart by complicated and corrupt international policies. We are, as Brian reminded us, a land of immigrants, a land of migrants, most of us at one time or another needing sanctuary in our own lives. And most of us, I'd venture to say, would consider ourselves welcoming folks. Our words of welcome, we say them every single week. No matter your age, your size, the color of your hair, or your skin, you are welcome here. They're like our welcome mat out before us. They promote our values, but they promote them to those who happen to be coming by, who happen to have made it through our doors. Now, invitation, that's another thing. Invitation is more than just a welcome for whoever might hear it, leaving it up to the other to take the first step to come in. No, invitation says not just anyone, but you. You who are in deep need now. You, come, let us provide you comfort and sanctuary. Do you see the difference? Invitation puts the onus on the inviter to extend themselves, to take the risk, to be willing to be rejected, and to be willing to be changed. Now, there are many, many ways to offer sanctuary, many ways to open your heart and your home, our hearts and our homes to others. But true sanctuary always requires an invitation, the willingness to be changed in unexpected and messy ways by the experience you are offering. Our history of providing sanctuary to refugees was messy. There were jobs to find, culinary tastes to accommodate, cultural understandings of time to reconcile. And one of our young Salvadorans, I'm told, brought his girlfriend here illegally so that they could be married, putting himself, his compatriots, his sponsors into legal jeopardy. That's messy. Super messy. So extending oneself in true invitation, whether it be to a young adult who needs a place to get back on their feet, or to an immigrant about to be deported, it requires a lot of letting go, especially of the romantic notions of charity. I emailed Mike Moran, the minister at First Unitarian Society of Denver, and I asked him how he felt his congregation needed to let go in order to be able to make the gift that they made, not only to Arturo, but to the whole system of immigration in this country, to all those immigrants struggling to stay here. And here's what he said. In terms of what was given up, several words come immediately to mind. One is safety. And by that, I think he was saying not only physical safety, although I'm not even sure that was an issue, but safety in terms of feeling secure as a congregation. He said there was a moment during the congregational meeting when we were discussing sanctuary. It was prior to our vote when one of our African-American members, who was a longtime UU, went to the microphone and said something like, "I've been a UU for a long time, and my experience is that UUs talk a really good game until the moment of sacrifice, genuine risk, until some discomfort is called for." And then she said to her congregation, "Please don't break my faith in us again." Mike says that was the turning point in their conversation with their congregation, and he has nothing but gratitude and appreciation that his own congregation was able to hear that call and respond to it. So the safety is about that risk, that letting go and moving into an unknowing, a discomfort. Mike said the other thing they learned to let go was the illusions of their privilege. Illusions of their privilege. Illusions in the sense that it's really easy for most of us white middle-class people to think about immigration as an issue outside of our immediate concern, something that happens to other people that we can choose to be engaged with or not. But the more we learned about the issue and the people, the more we learned about Arturo's story and the story of so many others, we came to realize how deeply all of our lives were intertwined with the immigrant community. "There's no escape, really," he said. "They are the people who build our houses, cook our restaurant meals, clean our hotel rooms, and many of our own houses. They pick and pack the food we eat," and on and on and on. So Mike came to say regularly that the fate of our community and the fate of the immigrant community are one and the same fate. We rise and fall together, letting go of that illusion of separateness. And then privilege, he said, because most of us live in the world where most of us, in this white middle-class community that most of us belong to, live in a world where we think we can get what we want if we just put a little bit of pressure on it. And our Boulder Valley Community Action Network had the same learning when we started to really organize to create change. We are used to being able to call the people in power, make a little connection, and have things move our way. But when you get on that edge of an issue that really demands that you take risk, you find that that's no longer the case. And what you assumed was privilege falls away. He said it's a real eye-opener to experience this, and I know we've had that experience in here. So this morning, Jennifer and Arturo invited us, you and me, to invest more deeply into the sanctuary movement. We've not been asked yet to provide physical sanctuary here, but who knows? But we've asked to extend ourselves in new ways beyond a passive welcome into a deeper engagement that can not only change lives, but change a whole system of oppression. So my question for us is, are we willing to be changed? Are we willing to be transformed by building new relationships? Relationships across difference that really isn't that much different. Because each of us has had some time in our life where we felt alone and abandoned and so wished we had sanctuary. If we can begin to connect on that level, if we can be willing to be changed, to risk to lose some privilege, to risk to let go of a romantic understanding of charity, to risk real relationship across difference, we can be a part of something really big. Are we ready to be changed?